Very pleased to welcome back to the show from Baseball America, John Manuel, who, fresh off of the All-Star game last night, we can complain and bitch and moan about All-Star games and all of this, but all things considered, if you just sat down last night and were devoid of anything else to do, it was not a bad little contest, quite honestly.
Yeah, it was a good game. The best part of it was it happened early, and that's good because, you know, my son's nine, and he saw all the action early. Later on, you know, it got a little bit less exciting, and that's, you know, one of the problems with an All-Star game is generally have the stars decide things in the baseball All-Star game. You know, the NBA All-Star game is generally a drab affair, but usually if it's close in the fourth quarter, then you do actually have, especially in the last half of the fourth quarter, usually the best players in the world go hard at each other and play hard, and they do generally try to win in those games. They'd rather win than lose. And in baseball, you know, you do have the teams would rather win than lose, but in the ninth inning, it's Glenn Perkins. Yeah, he's a hometown guy, but he's not a big star. He's facing Charlie Blackman and Josh Harrison. So, that you know, that's the only thing that you could really change from last night for me, but early on in the game, a lot of action, and the stars shined. That made it fun, especially early in the game with Jeter, Trout, Miguel Cabrera, those kind of guys, that action in the first inning for the American League.
As you can imagine, we follow hockey very closely here, and the one thing about the All-Star game and all of that in the NHL is it really becomes kind of an event for the city that it's in. So, I mean, when the Minnesota Twins closer comes in a game that's in Minnesota, I guess I get that because there's still part of it. It's in a way, it's for those people in the seats that very night.
Yeah, and plus he's not just a Twin, he's a Minnesotan. You know, Glenn Perkins went to a Minnesota high school. He went to the University of Minnesota. He was drafted by the Twins in 2004. So he's been part of that state and its baseball culture for 15 years, really, when you think about it. So if you're a big baseball fan in the state of Minnesota, you've known about that guy for a long time. And so it was really cool from that aspect. And, you know, I was there Sunday for the Futures game. And, again, the Twins have one of the best farm systems, and their two best prospects weren't even in the game because they were both hurt. And those but the prospects they did have, they were cheered lustily. And then the All-Star softball game, the celebrity softball game afterwards, Adrian Peterson, the other Minnesotans who were involved, were cheered big time. You know, Dave Winfield went to college in Minnesota, cheered big time when he came out there. And the same thing in the home run derby. I mean, why else was Brian Dozier in the home run derby other than he plays for the Twins? And, of course, Justin Morneau, Canadian, but also a former Twin, got a lot of the loud cheers during that home run derby. So it is part of that. You know, we had an NHL All-Star game down here in North Carolina, where I live, and it's not like we had any hometown hockey players to cheer for in that game. There weren't any North Carolina-born and bred hockey players yet. So I do think it's a special occasion for the hometown team, and I and the Twins did it upright. And I can tell you that the players, the minor leaguers who were there for the Futures game, they found the Twin Cities to be gracious hosts, and as a media member, I did as well.
A lot of people, and you knew it was coming, that it was going to be a lot about Derek Jeter last night, and it was. He goes 2-for-2 and all of that. We'll talk about the Wainwright Jeter scenario, I guess, in a moment. But what did we expect? Was it too much? I don't know. Who was Cal Ripken Jr.? Who was the last player of Jeter's ilk that played in an All-Star game, his final appearance at an All-Star game, where it wasn't predominantly about that player?
Yeah, I don't understand anybody who thinks it was too much. You just have to be a Yankee hater to think it was too much. You know, at the time, I remember, when I first worked at Baseball America, I thought it was too much on Jeter when we did a story in the late 90s about, okay, here's these three great shortstops in the American League, Garcia Parra, who'd won a batting title, A-Rod, who was A-Rod, and Jeter. And that the scouts we talked to, we surveyed like 30 or 40 scouts and front office people, and they chose Jeter. And I remember thinking that was just hype. Like, that couldn't be right. They look over the scope of their careers. A-Rod was a fraud. Nomar might have been a fraud, and certainly his career flamed out early. Derek Jeter's in the top 10 in hits of all time. He's the hits leader for the most storied franchise in history. He's never played anywhere but shortstop. I always thought the statistical analysis of his defense was a little overdone. Like, I don't think he's, you know, Ozzie Smith, and anybody who thinks great defensive shortstop is kind of kidding themselves. But you also don't win championships with a bad defender at shortstop. And that team, last I checked, won 5 championships with him. So he's had an amazing career, one of the best careers in baseball history. He deserves the accolades. He has been a class player. He's never really been involved in too many controversies. The only one you can really point to is that he didn't slide, he didn't change positions when A-Rod came aboard. And you could have made the argument that A-Rod was the better defender. You know, I always thought that Jeter, you know, earlier in his career could have shifted to center field, like, because it's a glamour position for the Yankees, DiMaggio, Mantle, et cetera, et cetera. And Robin Yount, you have a Hall of Fame precedent there. So I always thought that would have been a natural shift for him. But you know what? He handled shortstop his whole career, and I think the guy's earned all the accolades he got. In my mind, our society, especially our media, can just get way too cynical. They used to bend over backwards to protect the players. Now they knock the players like Jeter, who really don't deserve to be knocked.
So what about Adam Wainwright, the comments that he made, still within the game, whatever inning it was, when it was ongoing, and he talked about, you know, piping one for Derek Jeter, and then people get on social media, and I know that Kenny Rosenthal was talking about it. Was it, you know, was it against the spirit of the game to, you know, to groove one, as they would say? Jeter said afterwards, hey, if he grooved it, thanks, but, you know, you still got to hit it. I just think if you don't think this happens in baseball, you don't follow baseball very close.
Yeah, I do think that it happens. It wouldn't surprise me if Wainwright did it. You know, he said afterwards that he was trying to be sarcastic and dry humor, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know him well enough. I'd have to ask our Cardinals, you know, beat writers that we know, whether they really think Wainwright was being serious when he said that he piped one or not. But Jeter is right, though. You do still have to hit it. You know, it's not easy to hit it. I can tell you that nobody in that press box who was making fun of it could hit it, and neither you or I could hit it. Adam Wainwright throws hard. He's 6'7". It's coming straight downhill. Even when he's trying to groove one, it's hard to hit. So, and Jeter's 40, and, you know, when there are guys who are less good than Adam Wainwright, he struggles to hit it. So the fact that he actually hit an extra base hit last night, when I think he has 10 all year, that was the surprising part. But I don't have a problem with Wainwright if he grooved it. I do have a problem with him saying that he grooved it. He should know better than that. He's a veteran now.
Yeah.
He should know better than to say that he grooved it. The night and those moments are supposed to be about Jeter, not about Wainwright. And by saying that, he kind of puts himself in the story, which is a lesson that probably he learns. That if you're a young pitcher in that game who follows him afterwards, you should learn from that. Like, hey, when Miguel Cabrera is making his last rounds and you want to groove one for him, you don't admit it. You keep that to yourself. I'll let the moment be about Miguel Cabrera.
Chatting with Baseball America's John Manuel here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
John, a lot of talk about Derek Jeter, who led off for the AL. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. I'm looking at your Twitter feed. You've retweeted a guy that thinks at least the top four of that lineup are Hall of Fame bound. How normal is that for an All-Star game, or was this an exceptionally difficult lineup that the AL put on the field?
It is. I do think it happens more often than you think in an All-Star game. Again, it didn't happen in that ninth inning when it's Blackman and Harrison, those kind of guys. But I do think that was an exceptional lineup for the American League. Jeter's in the discussion for the all-time best shortstop. You know, he's not for me. But there are people in my mind who, as great as Honus Wagner was, he played 100 years ago. I think Honus Wagner could have played any era. But if you wanted to say, I'm going to do my all-time baseball discussion, I'm going to start it in 1947, post-integration, I think that's a very valid point. I think baseball history can really be split into pre- and post-integration pretty easily. You could go in post-expansion. If you want to make the case Derek Jeter is the best shortstop of all post-expansion era, I'll listen to that argument. I think he has a pretty strong argument. And then you're talking about Mike Trout, who's the best player of our generation, and I don't think it's particularly close anymore, and he's just the best thing going in baseball today. Then you have Robinson Cano, who's just a pure hitter. And look, the Mariners, they're one of the closest teams for you guys. The Mariners have been irrelevant for a decade. And this guy isn't even having his best year, and he's helped make them relevant again. I think that his brilliance, for a guy who played in New York all those years, I think his brilliance is undersold and underrated because he makes the game look so easy, and he plays so casually, and yet he's so casually brilliant. I think he's actually an underrated player, even for a guy who makes as much money as he makes. And then Cabrera is just the best pure hitter of our era, and that home run he hit was such a textbook swing. I replayed it like 5 times for my 9-year-old, so he could see it, and he could actually hear Harold Reynolds. It was a rare occasion when HR made a really great point, but he made a great point. So that was another thing I actually enjoyed about the broadcast last night, was HR and Tom Verducci. There were flubs here and there, but just the lack of McCarver was so great for me as a younger viewer, I'm so tired of Tim McCarver, so I was very glad to have an all-star game without him. So the first couple innings really were great. And that's Tom Boswell, one of the longtime national writers, who made that observation with the Washington Post, and I thought Boswell was right on. I think that was an exceptional American League lineup, the top of the lineup, and they put on a show in the first inning.
If I could get my mic on. John Manuel with Baseball America here on Sportsnet 960.
I thought I just dropped the mic there myself. Like,
yeah, I know.
Sounded like it.
Yeah, you made your point. That's it. The All-Star game now is behind us, and we can move on. Obviously, as we sit here, the conversation that we have north of the border with the Toronto Blue Jays, we talk about it with the guys that cover the team here for our company with Sportsnet and whoever else. What do the Jays do? On one hand, you look at this team, and I'm still not convinced that this is a team that's going to be able to hang in for seven games with the Dodgers, with the Tigers, with the A's. I'm skeptical at this point. But they're not playing well. They looked great in the month of May. And how much of the future do you want to invest in today if you're Alex Anthopoulos? The other side of it being, that's what the decree was. That's what the plan was, that it's about winning for now. It's about giving up assets to bring in the likes of Jose Reyes and R.A. Dickey. And you're only four games back of the division lead, and no one else is going to catch Baltimore. It's a two-team race. How aggressive does Alex Anthopoulos need to be? And even if he wants to be uber aggressive, how much better can he make this ball club with who you think is or might become available?
Well, obviously, his decision in those regards is really complicated by all these injuries that hit the Blue Jays during that 2-8 skid to the break. But I think the Orioles are quite vulnerable, and that division is very winnable. I think any team in that division can still win that division, even the Yankees with all their flaws, even the Red Sox with their flaws, because the Orioles, I just went and saw them this weekend. They're good. They certainly have a powerful lineup. And maybe Chris Davis hasn't hit 200 all year, but the Matt Wieters injury is a big deal for the Orioles. And their pitching staff doesn't have a star. I mean, their ace is Chris Tillman, and their closer is Zach Britton, who's a sinker baller. They can be had. So if I'm the Blue Jays, I think you still want to be aggressive within reason. They did just sign two first-round picks this year, but they can't trade. So if you want to dip into that farm system and trade an Aaron Sanchez or one of those kind of guys, I know there's a lot of interest in Daniel Norris, the left-hander. There was a ton of scouting interest in him on Sunday at the Futures game, and he performed well. It was a quick inning. His velocity was there. He threw really well, and he looked good. That guy could fetch you a difference maker. So if there's a difference-making pitcher that you can acquire, and I don't know if David Price is available, but they were clearly in on Samardzija. I don't know how, I don't think the Rays exactly know what they're going to do with David Price, to be quite honest with you. But their system could use a jolt. We have their AAA team here in Durham, and it's not very good. They could really figure that they could make a big deal. I think a guy like a David Price or if Cliff Lee were available, a frontline starter would be a difference maker, because you put him with Burley, Dickey, and the rest of that rotation, you would have a significantly better starting rotation than Baltimore. I think you could catch Baltimore. The Yankees pitching is extremely vulnerable. So in my mind, Alex Anthopoulos has been aggressive in the past. I think it's time for him to be aggressive again. I think that's what the Blue Jays people are telling him, is that they haven't won in 20-some years and haven't been to the playoffs. And look at what it did in Pittsburgh. Even just making the playoffs, how it revitalized that franchise. And I think that the Blue Jays, as a franchise, need that. They need that shot of relevancy. So I'd go for it. I'd go out with guns blazing if I were him.
I agree with you on a lot of fronts, John, just given how much better they could be with one more starter. And yet, the struggles they've had have been offensively of late. The rotation's held up just fine. I wonder how you approach that with the injuries as well. It's almost like the pressure point right now is the bats, and yet long-term, the greater need might be pitching. It's a weird spot he's in.
It is, because to win for a postseason, to win, first you got to just get in. Those 06 Cardinals taught us, 83 wins, just get in. Once you get in, Adam Wainwright, we were just talking about earlier, he was a closer on a World Series championship team in 2006. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to get into that tournament. And the Blue Jays haven't had the chance to find out how good they'd be in 20 years in that postseason event. So, but you can make small moves around the margins. I don't know which second baseman are available, but second base has been an issue for Toronto all year. Do you just play Ryan Goins there and say, look, we're going to take his 200 or 150 average, but he's going to make every play? Or do you, you know, stick with a Kawasaki there? You know, they've rotated so many players at second. It feels like when Encarnacion, Lynn, Lowry are all healthy, that lineup should be productive enough. I do feel like every team that has had Jose Reyes has been dependent on Jose Reyes, and that can be dicey because he's an injury-prone player. So the Blue Jays are the latest team. The Mets learned this before, and the Marlins learned it for 1 year. When you have Jose Reyes and you see what he can do igniting the top of your lineup, you know, your lineup sags when he's not around. But that's just going to be a function of it. He's such a difference-making player, though. When he's healthy, you know, he helps everyone else in the lineup. So there's that part. You have to just keep your fingers crossed. But you can make some small moves around the margins, I think, to help that lineup. Again, second base will be the most specific position I can think of with that team. But I think for winning a postseason series, you're really looking at a starting pitcher. So, you know, you might only need 86, 87 wins to win the American League East. That might be good enough, especially with Matt Wieter's injury in Baltimore, and that's really going to affect them in the second half.
While we talk about the Blue Jays, I guess the question should be asked, and haven't paid much attention, what if the Baltimore Orioles do something? They have that division lead, and they must be thinking about adding. And I wonder, just across Major League Baseball, what are you hearing, whether it be division leaders in the National League? The Dodgers look like they're in, even though they're only one up on San Francisco. What more could they do? A great race in the NL Central. What else are you hearing as far as possible bolstering around the league?
Well, you know, the big moves are which of these starting pitchers get moved. I think a lot of the smaller moves are going to happen first. Just a team like San Diego, that's just irrelevant. And that has some veterans that people could use. Houston Street jumps to mind. He's a closer. He's pitched in postseason play. You know, he's been in the big leagues for a long time, and he's just having another very steady year in San Diego. Could Houston Street help? Could he help the Dodgers? Could he help Baltimore? I think he'd help those two contending teams significantly. You know, because in my mind, it's better to have two closers than one. That way, you don't wear out your one guy in a postseason series, especially, or in a regular season series. I really think the Giants are going to make a big move. The Dodgers have kind of passed them in that division. There's been some wobbling with that Giants team. They've got a Triple-A catcher named Andrew Susak, who is a pretty good offensive player, and of course their big league catcher is pretty fair himself in Buster Posey. So they have a blocked prospect they can move. Would not surprise me if one of the National League Central teams also tried to make a big move. You know, Milwaukee's looking to get back in the playoffs. All four teams there are jumbled together. And the Pirates have a very deep farm system. So if the Pirates wanted to make a move for one of those difference-making players, for example, if a David Price is on the market. So to me, the Rays kind of are going to be a real difference maker down the stretch, whether they make a big run in the second half, but they decide to keep Price and make this push in this very, in my mind, wide open American League East, or do they trade Price because their farm system, and they haven't drafted well for 5 years, and David Price would be the kind of player who would allow them to restock their farm system. And the rest of their team, other than Price and Longoria, is basically trade pieces from other teams. So, you know, whether it's Zobrist or Matt Joyce or whoever, Will Myers. So I think the Rays hold a lot of the keys, and then the other team that kind of holds the key is Philadelphia. If Philadelphia finally decides to sell, can Jonathan Papelbon be a closer that helps another team, or will they put a guy like Cliff Lee or even Cole Hamels on the market?
Great stuff, John. Appreciate it. Back into the second half. The grind continues. We appreciate your time, as always, pal.
Yeah, no problem. I'm on the AAA All-Star Game broadcast tonight on MLB Network. So if you really need more baseball tonight, I think we're the only baseball in town.
Or if we need more John Manuel.
That's right. You can always get that on Twitter, too. So all across all mediums, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Attaboy. Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks.
There's John Manuel, Baseball America.